The DP camps did it. The displaced persons camps that had sprung up across Europe in the wake of the Nazi turmoil. Some of them still existed in the early 50s. Charles Vincent Gauntlet, ridiculously young and just starting to shave bum fluff from his chin, had been posted to Germany as security officer at a DP camp close to Frankfurt. "That's why I knew the name, Gregory Scott," Charlie muttered. "Of course." He was vaguely aware of the voice, but would never have recognized the man. The voice would have caused some disquiet in him, trying to place it, for the kind of work he had pursued for most of his life relied a good deal on memory. "I was older than you even then. Still am by a good few summers," the Father Superior chuckled. "But I remembered you straight away, Charlie. I knew you as soon as Kit mentioned your name, and it didn't surprise me to hear what you'd become. You had a very tidy mind, Charles. You liked things to be in their proper places." Scott chuckled again, a hand slicing up to run across his sleek, bald head. "That was another life, long before I was drawn to this, and long before I was called to the religious life. You don't recognize me, though, and you could never know what a profound effect you had on me. Sometimes I think I would never have studied documents, their ages and their owners, if it had not been for you." "Why so?" "Because, even as a young man, you were able to read people like books. I watched you, the way you cocked your head to one side as you listened, and your intensity. You had even then the great ability to concentrate on the person you were with. You used to say, 'I don't listen to the words, I listen to the music.' That wasn't original." "No? I'm really quite surprised you didn't recognize me." Gauntlet gave a long sigh. "No, but I knew the voice, Father Gregory." The voice was a distant memory, for sure, but now even stronger recollections returned. The damp, clinging rain, and the dreariness of the place where Major Gregory Scott had been his CO. The wire, the ramshackle wooden buildings, the hospital beds, the squaddies with closed faces, the British doctors and nurses, the officers such as Gregory Scott, constantly questioning the men and the women who tried to hang on to the shreds of dignity, or conversely the fiction of their lives in that terrible place. Yet most of them had seen more dreadful places than a DP camp. Gauntlet also knew that all those years ago, Major Gregory Scott had taken his time before he had any trust in the adolescent officer who was Charlie Gauntlet, a different young man in a different world. I remember your sergeant in charge of the other ranks. A colour sergeant, yes? Colour Sergeant Hammer. Silly, the name stuck in his throat, because he was talking to an elderly monk who looked away and did not meet his eyes. They both had sins, he thought. Both retained the trace of old sins. Sins neither would like to see dragged out again for public scrutiny. Together, and in words not spoken aloud, they formed their own collusion about Colour Sergeant Hammer. "Hammer of the North, you called him." "Yes, so I did." Gauntlet saw Scott as he'd been, young and tagged by the war's horror, a swagger in his step, and vanity in the way he wore his uniform, the angle at which he cocked his cap over one eye. For a second, Gauntlet saw the young major with a jet-haired woman, and knew what they did together in the CO's quarters at the DP camp, which he'd been able to smell for the rest of his life. And now, the young officer who had taken the woman to his bed was the old monastic priest who sat behind the desk, his eyes sad and reflective. There were other things Charlie remembered, serious, important things, things he would have loved to talk about now, but instinctively held back, waited for the moment, holding on to some tiny vital facts in case he needed leverage. In particular, he thought of the two military police corporals who'd been an integral part of life in that camp. He remembered them as big men, almost giants, which of course they were to someone of Charlie's stature. "I was able to confess and receive absolution once I became a Christian," the priest murmured, as though he had second sight, and could read what Charlie saw with the eye of his recall. Lucky for you. Charlie spoke quietly. His own sins of the time bore in on him, clear photographs tattooed to his memory. He wondered if it was true that they were stamped into his soul. I cannot find forgiveness so easily, he said in the here and now. You think it's easy for anybody? Scott looked Charlie in the eyes, smoothing his bald head with his right hand yet again. There is more than just a recitation of some magic words by a witch doctor priest. That's a problem with Rome, you know. They don't mean it, but they give the impression that it's all easy. The doctrine and the ritual make it appear to be simple. It isn't, of course. It isn't for Roman Catholics any more than it is for Anglicans. There's a little word called contrition. You really have to be disgusted with your own sins before you can hope for absolution. And there's nothing easy about that. There has to be contrition and penance. Absolution comes in the middle, but I believe it can take years. Then time will cease. Time, as we know it, will end. Gauntlet nodded. And who will know what dreams we'll dream? It was a dreadful time. The time won't let you off the hook. Charlie saw Sergeant Hammer lying dead as Scott stood impassive at the man's feet. Again, he quoted Shakespeare. The times are out of joint. Always. God won't forgive you because of the history of your days. Father Gregory sighed heavily. Yes, we've both changed. But it's good to see you, and to see you at a time when we're looking at something very positive about the Christian faith. But Gauntlet allowed the chance to slip by. He was still mired in the past, in the camp near Frankfurt. Hammer, he said again. Colour Sergeant Hammer. Repeating it. We both have cause to remember him. And Corporal Day, Shortest Day, the lads used to call him. Gauntlet looked up with a broad smile, as though the priestly monk had granted him some great favour. Shortest Day, they called him Christmas Day as well. Charlie recalled that the nickname Shortest, or Shorty, was a joke in itself, for Corporal Day was a man built on a massive scale, something akin to the Colossus at Rhodes, he thought. Around 6'3", with huge shoulders, great arms with hands like hams, and a nose from which an original bald eagle's beak could have been designed. Used to harass the men. I would laugh. The man's forehead was wrinkled by a zigzag scar. He has visited me here, Corporal Day. Almost an aside. Then Scott raised his voice. Grip your rifle, lad. Grip it like you'd grip your mother-in-law's throat, lad. It was an odd, uncanny imitation of a man glimpsed for a short time only in the adolescence of Gauntlet's life. Charlie nodded, then looked up and saw the priest was staring at him, his eyes gleaming, watering, and his mouth opening to say something. Gauntlet watched him change his mind, alter the words that had been ready in his brain. Instead, the priest said, It's good and strange to meet you again, Charles Vincent Gauntlet. You've come to put the stamp of authority on this incredible diary. It was almost a question, not quite, a millimeter off. You probably know there was a time when I was able to help him. Kit Palfrey, I mean. But that's all gone now, hasn't it? Really? Charlie thought. This is news to me. And at the same moment he realized that Gregory Scott had deliberately eased him down the path toward Shortest Day, to take him away from Colour Sergeant Hammer. Again he saw the body with the look of surprise frozen on Hammer's face. Charlie bumbled with his hands, wrapping them around each other, interleaving his fingers. Helped Kit, did you? He thought. Aloud he asked, You believe it then? You believe this dictated diary? It's real? Gregory Scott inspected his fingernails, then opened a drawer in his desk, bringing out a round glass dish piled high with jelly babies. Have one. He gestured toward Charlie. You own them? Gregory lifted his eyebrows. Technically, yes. But a monk isn't allowed to own anything, Father Superior, isn't that right?